I think the best art is honest. And I hope this invokes real emotion. And before I lose my train of thought, like I said, that's one criticism we got is like, we're very blunt. Like everybody wants lyrical, miracle, spiritual shit. I see a lot of the reviews, you know what I'm saying? And for the people who get it, you get it. But for the people that want us to be fucking Arm and Hammer 2.0, it's not that.
First I say, what we're gonna do? Then you say, I don't know, what do you want to do? What we're gonna do, what you want to do?
I have an idea.
You're gonna dig this.
The Fly Fidelity Podcast
is the solution.
It's the best.
Check it out.
You wanna get super fly, fly.
Details just ahead.
Do you love credible content, but hate
how long you have to wait?
And who wants
super thick and frothy dumpster juice with rat corpses in it?
There's a better way.
Fly Fidelity.
Fly Fidelity.
Fly Fidelity.
Fly Fidelity.
Fly.
Fly. Fly Fidelity.
Fidelity. Fly Fidelity Podcast.
Fly Fidelity, baby. Fidelity, baby. Fidelity.
With your host, Luke Bailey.
What's going on and welcome to the program. This week, we're joined by Quentin Branch and Brian Warren of Chicago rap duo Angry Black Men. Strap in for a captivating conversation in which we discuss their latest album, The Legend of ABN, and everything between.
Killing this shit. I know you niggas is feeling this shit. Spider-Man spitting that venomous shit. Stanley Kubrick with the cinema shit. I'm ignorant, bitch. The music of my niche. Market when I switch the flow up. Bars flowing like it's fucking throw up. They be hoping and praying I grow up. Angry black nigga trying to blow up. Same nigga since I woke up. Same nigga since I showed up. I'm a lame, but I got my dough up. When I glow up, then I go nuts. Oh, you bitches and hoes. Spitting that fire, that heat, I suppose. Running this shit like the snot on my nose. Drip Nike down to the soles. Don't trip, nigga. Watch your toes, watch your back, watch your foes, what you reap, what you sow, ho, I got bars in the low, so I'm at your neck, beating that ass.
Could you maybe talk about building Angry Black Men over the last 5 years and developing a sound and style that's as effective as affecting? What was it about the revolution within your evolution that helped you to make The Legend of Angry Black Men in a way that you couldn't or you maybe weren't able to in the past?
That's a good question. I think when we first started, the sound was way more accessible. And I think with this one, we wanted to really master the sound that we started 5 years ago. So it was a graceful evolution. And I really credit the Reality EP for being the bridge between Headshots and The Legend of ABM. Because shout out to Derek Formats. He made that production just special. And we wanted to accommodate that as best as we can.
When we were first starting off doing this and we were making the accessible sound and it was like, oh, this is fairly easy. We wanted to like challenge ourselves. And as we kept building on the itinerary or whatever word you want to use, we're just racking up albums in the discography. We was like, every album, this Legend ABM is what we're working on. This has to hit. This has to be something different. It has to feel like caviarish, but we have to still give fans and people that's going to come to future shows like the greatest time of their life. So it's really hard trying to maneuver through the streets, do the shows, meet up, and you know, saying that was all a part of the revolution. And now that we've been at a standstill and we just kind of seeing what we just been building, just been feeling like a slow but progressive garden that we've planted over time.
Yeah, I think the shorter version of that is it all came naturally. It was a natural evolution.
Well, you mentioned it was a challenging evolution as well. I'm curious as to what that challenge was like. Can you tell me about navigating those feelings between owning, I guess, your past and putting back those layers of who you used to be and evolving with this record? Was there a catalyst or a moment that pushed the purpose and limits of who you could be personally? And how did you work through that with this project specifically?
Ooh.
Honestly, just living life and trying to fit such a crazy, chaotic life, and then even certain things that you've lived a few years ago that you have to try to channel in your mind and then like try to make it rhyme is, I don't know, it was like the project grew with us as we were living life. You know, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
It was kind of easy to like in a sense make a hard album because we were living so much life and then writing about it. It just kind of came together. It was just like clay molding together.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges was making this album personal, but yet accessible to a fan base at the same time, where we didn't want a trauma dump, but we also wanted to make music. The last thing we wanted was to make people feel bad for us, because I think Black American art, more specifically, runs off trauma. And we did not want to do that. So we still want to make fun songs. I see a lot of criticisms. I read reviews all the time, and I'm on all these sites. A lot of people are like, oh, they're just, you know, the rapping is just so simple. And like, it's like, damn, we just can't have fun in rapping no more. Like, everything got to be super technical and mysterious and shit.
Yeah. And what I get from a lot of critics is they say, yeah, we want it a little more deeper. We want it a little more. And I'm just like, I wasn't trying to give deep thoughts like that. I just wanted to give people a little eye opener on my life. And, you know, hopefully that was enough for them to resonate and relate and actually, you know, connect with me, want to come to a show, meet me, talk with me, be friends with me. That's what I want out of my support.
Absolutely. To sink in your own reality and not the expectations of anybody else's reality.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about growing through the creative sequence of an album, specifically your last three projects, how important was it to consider your practice in the past as a way to, I guess, achieve a clarity and follow the right voices and choices in your head as an artist? Were you clear on what you wanted to achieve when you started this album? Or was it, like you say, an ongoing evolving experience when you were creating it?
I think I'm glad you said like the last few projects, because I think that's when we really start to find our own pocket. But I think we had a clear message with each of them. But I think with this one, like we said, we knew we had a. Yeah, it's because you're on the ground, sleep tweaking. Sorry, the dogs. Like,
so good. Okay.
Let them in with their sister. Sadie. Really, Sadie? I think with this one, we knew what we were getting into. So,
It's been evolving with me. Like, I didn't have no clear set intention when I made the album. I didn't have no clear set goals. I didn't even know I want to do this. So, I don't know. It's growing with me, I can say, in my own.
Like an outsider, stay gold, pony boy. Complex mind, and they still don't know me, boy. Nigga, so funny, boy. Petty, what you owe me, boy. Bars so addictive, overdose like an opioid. I see humanoid shadows when I sleep. Android still dreaming of the sheep. Spit heat when I rap like slam poetry. Known vocally to make dope shit like Coquelin. Strong like Hercules. Fighting with the Hydra. Chopping heads off real quick to unalive you. Something like a hybrid. Whole other species. Shitting on these internet rappers with my feces. Someone gotta teach these kids about ABM. Legend in my own head, burnt from my cranium. Remember when we played our first show, Subterranean? Yeah. 5 years later, go strong like vibranium.
So where do you think you've grown the most as rappers over the duration of crafting this project? Specifically?
Lyrics?
Yeah, I'm gonna opt in and say lyrics as well.
Yeah, I think they got more... I hate using the word personal, but that's all I can really think of. I just think they got way more personal to us. And compared to our first couple of EPs and albums, you know, it was very surface level and whatnot. And I think with this one, we've really found who we are and we're going to grow up.
You cracked the code.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think when you first start off as an artist, you mimic who you want to be like, and then you start finding yourself. Like, you know, I'm a big Danny Brown fan. Like, I used to try to rap like him. I still do. I catch myself sometimes. I know Brian previously said we didn't really have, he didn't see, I know we had two different answers for that. I was like, yeah, we kind of had a vision of what we wanted. And Brian was like, I didn't really know what we were walking into. I think it was a little bit of both of that. We knew we were done with the imitation phase. I know that. So when I say that, when he's, you know, when we have the two conflicting answers, I still think overall we knew that we wanted this to be. I mean, we talked about this. We wanted this to be the next level. We anticipated that it was going to be better than what we've put out.
And I was saying, I knew what I wanted out of this. I had a vision, but I just didn't know if we were going to get it. I didn't know if this album was going to be the right time. And it just so happened that it is now.
I wanted to expand on your writing process and something you've recently described on the Next Movement podcast about your process and the way by which you both like to come up with a rough draft or a verse. And after that, you like to clash with each other. How do you walk a line collaboratively between sharing a moment inside of yourselves as artists and holding a moment of what the group ABN means to other people outside of yourselves?
It gets a little complicated, but not too much. It really stems from your own personal experience. Well, no, it stems from a subject that we would both think about in common. And then we would separate, write, and then come back and make it cohesive.
Mm-hmm. We would try our best to. Cohesive was the game for this album in particular. I can't say that much for our past projects, but with this album, we really wanted it to be cohesive. And honestly, it's really up to interpretation of how people take it. Because I've noticed, I think I've said this in the last interview, there's two angry black men, or two perspectives. There's before George Floyd and there's after George Floyd. So I think we were looked at a little bit differently before George Floyd. And then after George Floyd riots, people started looking at us way differently. And I think it actually kind of helped us. And I do think this is why it took a lot more time to get attention. I think people saw the name and the logo and, you know, even us. I mean, you know, like being black men in America, it's not like we're marketable to like Justin Bieber standards, you know?
How would you describe your relationship with Pursuing Perfection, and how has that destination changed in terms of growth with how you both approach making music today?
Honestly, just hearing the reception from the album and just going back and listening to my verse and then going back and reading from my notebook and stuff like that. Honestly, I was just living my best life in my rhymes, and it just makes it now easier for me to not have to be so perfect. I can just be exactly who I was when we first came into this, but you know what I'm saying, like with the legend ABM, I feel like I can be exactly who I am for the next project.
I think perfection is that is what you want it to be, you know what I'm saying? It's never really changed for me. Because nothing's going to be perfect chasing that. And like, I had a version of Angry Black Men that was perfect in my head. But, you know, it never really comes out like that.
When did that change? When did that version change for you?
Ooh. That version changed, I would say, after George Floyd.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think that, and I just came to this realization. Because I remember doing a deep dive and looking at our stuff back in 2018, 19. Very different from 2020 and on.
Is there a specific track that for you both represents this growth and change in paradigm we're talking about right now?
You talk about on this album or in the past?
In the past, that takes you to this album specifically.
Yeah, Brian, like this man never fails to like mention it. It's a track produced by Khaki Blazer. It's called called Coen Bros. It can be found on a collaboration project between Death Bomb Art and Hasu Mountain. That was the track that really pushed us to this this sound that you hear now. This is very wild and chaotic, and I'll never forget when we recorded that track, this man was feeling challenged. We were like, man, we should get on more stuff like that. But I feel like the second wave of that is finding out about JPEG Mafia.
Yeah, it was like that made me change the format in my writing, which made me change the format with how I would rap. So like that was really the defining moment for myself.
I love that. I love that. Is there a song on this album that's closest to a snapshot of where your lives are right now? Which is the song that speaks the purest and loudest to you both?
Stanley.
I'm gonna say Sabotage. Yeah, I say Sabotage is the track that I felt like that. In my opinion, that encapsulates everything.
Yeah, Sabotage.
No, if you like, feel like it's Stanley Kubrick, no,
I said Stanley Kubrick is because my verse kind of wraps up life in one whole minute.
Yeah, I mean, like there's that best represent us separately, for sure. But I think the most cohesive when we're together is Sabotage.
Yeah, I just feel like Sabotage was like a cold, dark night.
I feel like Fuck Off is such a powerful statement and a really coherent blend of rowdiness and articulation that speaks directly to the energy of what Angry Black Men is about in a way that I guess feels urgent and very relevant to now. What was the context that led you to that moment?
I would give you a Hollywood version. I'm going to give you the real version. Because I remember this, and I don't know if you remember, bro. I was listening to a lot of XXXTentacion, and I was doing the fuck off chant that he was doing, or whatever. He does it. I don't think he's saying fuck off in a song, but he does say fuck something.
Right.
Yeah, I know you remember that, because I kept saying it that day. And you were like, you just were standing in the studio, and I was like, oh, and then Derek was like, y'all should put that. And I was like, oh, boy. But it actually turned out to be like, the best, like, I would say the best option. And we kind of put our own spin on that. So it was like, the hook came for Fuck Off first. No, it came last. It came last. We already have verses for that.
Yeah.
And like I said, I was really listening to XXXTentacion a lot. And he has a song where he chants fuck something. I can't remember exactly what it was. I was just saying it in my head randomly. This man picked up. I was saying it throughout the whole day. This man picked up on that. Derek was like, our producer was like, that sounds cool. Y'all should throw that in there. I'm looking at him because I know Derek don't listen to no damn XXXTentacion, so he don't know where that's coming from. But I was like, hey, it sounds fucking cool. And it matches like the vibe we wanted. And I think we modified the lyrics to fit more of that hook too.
Yeah, because I had some lyrics pre-written for the soundtrack Fuck Off. And like when I came up with the hook,
it's a soundtrack instrumental.
Yeah, for the song "Fuck Off," I did not want to I didn't want to stray away from that hook, so I definitely like tied my verse towards that hook and the energy too.
Was there anybody else that might surprise people that you were listening to during the making of this album?
Oh, yeah. We probably got our own personal picks. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's weird because people think we just listen to, like, that weird shit like that. I'm not saying it's weird, but, like, I like Sexy Red. Not saying I was listening to her at the time, but I'm saying I listen to Sexy Red. I listen to Radiohead, Billy Idol. It's just, the shit is just... I can pull up my playlist and just look at random songs right now. I was listening to like a lot of Little Brother. I mean, Aphex Twin. I'm a huge fan of Aphex Twin. Just shit like that, you wouldn't think, you know what I'm saying? Del the Funky Homo Sapien. At the time, for me, my perspective from when I was making that album, I was listening to like Little Ugly Mane at the time. this is white rapper that my friend put me on. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He was one that I was really messing with. Danny Brown was a point of reference. Like, that I was really listening to. Like, I was send Derek Atrocity Exhibition. Because I was like, our producer, I was like, I want to make something as dark and honest as this. And then I you know, Little Ugly Man, he had an album called Mr. Thug Isolation back from like 2012.
That's right.
I would lie a lot. It was just so fun. Like, the funness of that album, I was like, ooh. But also, it was personal. Because the Internet by Childish Gambino, I love how personal it gets. Yeezus, I'm a huge fan of Yeezus, but I think that goes without saying. Huge fan of Dialect from the early 2000s for Filthy Tongue of Gods and Griots.
Nice.
I approached this album wanting it to one day be put, you know, as a classic along the lines of those type of rap albums. In my perspective, I can't tell you with Brian, because Brian, we have two different things.
Yeah, what about you, Brian?
Mine's just, it's not a long list, but I'm the biggest fan of Kendrick Lamar. Like, it's my.
You listened to him to a lot when you're making this?
Yeah, I was listening to him, because that's what prompted the Stanley Kubrick verse. If you listen to Kendrick Lamar's like earlier work off of Section 80, that's what helped me prompt Stanley Kubrick verse. But I would want for you to match that up, see which song it was. But and I would listen to a little bit of Childish Gambino, and to just throw a few bands in there, AC/DC, Cheap Trick from Chicago, and just to help with the energy and just the rhythm. And
I think one band that we can both agree on that influenced us, especially our performances, Bad Brains.
Facts, yes, Bad Brains.
Tell me about the song N'Amour Propio. I'm curious as to what the role of therapy was in recording and releasing that song specifically to the world.
Best friend, fuck my bitch. All right, I'm done.
It was really, I was in a mental place of self-love, and I felt like what I got from social media was like, I feel like we're in this time right now with some people that are growing up, or some people that never got taught self-love, but like they needed to hear it. And I myself needed to understand if I love myself. So I had to write down certain things that I love about myself. And it would be hard. I didn't think it was going to be this hard for me to write a list of things that I love about myself. And I don't know, I just took that list. I saved it for, I don't know, like half a year. Then I revisited that list, and I just took those things and made it into a rhyme, made it into rap. And I said, this is what's going to, I don't know, I want this to be something that people can go back to and learn from.
Was that right? A lot of the Mr. Morale inspiration? Just loving yourself? Did you get inspired by that album?
Oh, no.
Okay.
This was just like literally something way off of my own that I was just doing.
Just saying, you think subconsciously that album inspired you to get that personal?
No, because it was just things happening in my life to where I was just like...
I was just curious. I didn't know.
No. You good. It was just things happening in my life where I was like, I don't know, we're getting on a personal level.
Yeah.
So I feel like self-love will be a great additive.
Well, I want to add on to this. Even though I have nothing to do with that track, I'm not on that one. But that Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, because Brian, it was hard. I'm going to say this. I came to you and I was like, we should get more personal. You didn't want to do that. The reason I came to you is because of the album, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. I was like,
I listened to that album. But I didn't get the idea. Maybe subconsciously.
That's what I was trying to say. I was like, hey, you never know. Because I know for a fact, when I heard that album, I was like, we got to get more personal, even though we're nowhere on this nigga level. But he did that, you know. I think he pulled that off tremendously well. And that's an album that's jarring now. But 5 years from now, I think people are going to be calling it a classic.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So it's really Quentin who's in part to credit for you pulling that part of yourself out of the process, as well as Kendrick.
Yeah. Yeah, because he did approach me. He was like, bro, we got to write something. And like my mind is scrambled because I really wanted this album to hit. I was like, you know, dealing with anxiety. And I'm like, what should I write about? And yeah, listening to Kendrick and how deep he went on that album, I didn't realize I took something from that and I needed to give that same type of vibe. But I guess I was living so much of my own life. I was like, I want to write something about self-love. I never wrote about this before in a bar, in a song.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, like I said, for me, yeah, getting personal on this album is one thing that it was a mission for me. I know that for a fact. I was like, people need to know us more. It's time. It's been half a decade. It's been six, at the time of making the album, it was 5 years. Now it's been close to seven.
Right.
But yeah, I knew like, well, we're 5 years into this. We need to stop making surface level songs. We need to get more personal, let people know us, at least something about us, you know?
What was that challenge like for you personally?
It wasn't really a problem with me. It was more a problem with you.
Yeah, it was a problem with me because I was just writing about stuff and I knew I was putting the nail on the coffin when I called this man to say, hey, you think they're going to be mad if I expose this or say this about a person? And he was like, bro, it's music, it's art. They'll understand. I was like, okay, come on, let's do it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that, honestly. I'm going to be real. Because some of my favorite rappers did. Like I said, I love Because the Internet by Childish Gambino. I know like that's like, it's an album that's, I didn't know that album was as polarizing as it was. I thought everybody loved it, but apparently it got like a lot of hate when it came out. But now people really like it. But I've always liked it. And in that album, Childish Gambino is very personal. He talks about like a lot of like, this is right after he left Community, started taking rap more seriously. He didn't know if it was gonna be successful. It was a different time. I'm like, if he could do that, then why can't we do that? Like, I just felt like we got to start taking this more seriously. And I think I was around the same age as Donald when he made that album, I want to say. So I felt a very big connection. Like when that came out, I was like 19. You know, while I was making this album, I was like 27, 28. So, you know, like it's different now. When you get older, you have a different perspective on life. So the album, in my opinion, hits harder to me. And I hope, you know, people listen to this, it hits for them, you know, when they get older. Because there's people listening to this now and they're like 17, they're going to grow up with it.
Sometimes inferior situations, I wasn't the smoothest. I place myself in dark spaces, times are ticking, I'm choosing. I got a desk job, somehow I still feel like I'm losing money. Times are sitting on my ass, I'm not making no improvements. Room getting fucking dirty because my job got me moving.
What can you tell me about the track Outside This?
That was a great track. It was a shout out to Sketch. I just wanted to rap on that. Like to me, I just wanted to have bars, and I kind of wanted to hint at our origins in that track. You know, I think I closed it with, remember we played our first show 5 years ago or something around that line. Subterranean 5 years ago. I really wanted that to be a nice finisher track. And it was added last minute. It wasn't a track that was like planned. It kind of came towards the back end of the album. And I just wanted it to be bars. And I wanted somebody on there that was just going to deliver and Sketch. He showed love very early on to us, and I thought he was perfect.
How long do you typically like to sit with an instrumental before you start writing and thinking about a particular vision for a song?
Instantly, I know if I'm not gonna fuck with it. That's me. I can tell. I think it's hard not to fuck with Derek's stuff. It's really hard not to fuck because he's really good. And I think I say, you know, I don't want to word this. Derek, when I listen to his album, he actually took a lot of inspiration from things that we would send him in this album. And I think that's really cool because with Reality, that was 100% his brain. Like, he just did, you know, whatever he wanted to. But I think while he made these beats for this album, he had like a lot of outside influences for, I think, the first time in his life, really, when making production. You know, influences to where he wasn't, you know, I would send him, like I said, Atrocity Exhibition, all these experimental hip hop albums. I definitely know for a fact he checked them out and was like, okay, okay. And we actually, there's a track called Magnum Opus. I think that's the closest you'll get to an Angry Black Men Formats vibe because I co-produced that track. And I think out of all those tracks, that one's the more, that's what I'm looking for. Ambient, I would say.
Yeah.
I think all the other ones are super hard and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know what I'm saying? So as you can see, like, the potential of something more there with Magnum Opus. Because a lot of people are like, man, that track sounds a lot different from the rest of them.
There's a lot more space.
Yeah. And like, credit to him for what he did. But like I said, there's chords in there that Derek just wouldn't want. I'm not saying he wouldn't want to put in there. It's just that it's not his style like that. Because if right. You see, the rest of the tracks are more fast forward, whereas the chords that I made for that are very soft and slow.
How did you approach that space versus the other production on the album? How did you go into that and consider what you were going to say and how you were going to say it?
It just felt more personal because I knew, like, when I made those chords for that song in particular, I knew I wanted to say something very personal. I remember I was playing with my best friend's son piano that he bought him, and I just wanted to make something. I remember I have a video of myself playing with it and finally finding that dun dun. Dun 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 dun. It just felt very triumphant. It just felt very like sad, but hopeful. That's the word I'm looking for. It felt very hopeful when I made it.
And bittersweet.
Yeah, there we go. And it was the last track. I remember when I sent it to Derek and he made it, I remember he added on what, you know, the skeleton that was there. We both were like, this should be the last track. And it ended up being the last track because it just felt like, I don't know, very personal. Like I said, a lot of people ask about Magnum Opus. It's a very popular track. I didn't know that. That's crazy to me. And I tell them, like, yeah, you know, it's a little different because I do think it's two people behind that. Whereas Derek was, you know, he was in his bag for most of this. And Brian would send him different, if you want to get into that story.
Oh, yeah, I would send him like early on in the process of making the album. I would send him like just random noises that I would make, or I may send him as something as silly as a fart, and he would use that, or just it would be something that he would take away and be able to incorporate into what we have built today. So I'm not for sure what he has used of mine or what he has not used. But I know I was just like going crazy. I wasn't aiming for no type of recognition or anything of that nature. I was just like I'm a music junkie. I'm a music head. So whatever engine roaring, you know, that's just how I roll.
Going from Magnum Opus to Dead Men Tell No Lies, which is completely different tonally and features a complete artistic 360 from each of you. What can you tell me about the creation of that track?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I could say this. Coming up with Dead Men Tell No Lies, it was very artistic. It was a very artistic process because I had something written. I'm not for sure if you like had something pre-written, but I remember we was in the studio we were trying to like shape up the bars, like, you know, cut it to a good, to a fine point where, okay, this sounds good and this looks good right here on the track. And then, I don't know, I didn't know how to say the verse at first, but when I heard Sharif's part, it kind of prompted me to come in the way that I came on the track. So it was very spontaneous. It was a very spontaneous artistic process for Dead Men Tell No Lies.
Yeah, and if you want a Pulp Fiction movie, this shit, you just got the end of the movie. The beginning of the movie, essentially, I sent this nigga Derek a beat called, well, it wasn't even a beat, it was a song called The Day the World Went Away by Nine Inch Nails, which he was our huge fan of. So we get back to the origins of shit, and he made his own version of that. So if you listen to that track and you listen to Dead Men Tell No Lies, I'm glad you said the title right, because people say Tell No Tales because that fucking Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Now let me stop. But you could definitely see, like, yeah, the day the world went away and Dead Men Tell No Lies, you can fucking 100% see it. I sent Derek that track. He was already a huge fan. He knew the track. He was like, oh, yeah, I got you. He made that. I remember hitting up Sharif. I was like, because Sharif was like, man, if we make something, it got to be crazy.
Yeah.
And I just, that was the one. And I told him a couple of things. I was like, just talk, you know, the theme of this album is capitalism, black art in white spaces, existentialism. I just threw in Philip K. Dick and Blade Runner. I was just sending him a bunch of like tag words. And that's what he came back with. And I don't know. I know Brian was working on his verse at the very last. So your verse came last. I know that.
Yeah, it came very last minute.
I know. And I know Sharif had his first. I think mine came after Sharif. Yeah, I think I wrote that to that. So I remember thinking, I think that's one of the moments I wrote a verse to the instrumental, because it really fits the vibe. And I listened to how Sharif was saying it, and I was fed up about Pitchfork. I was fed up about a lot of things. So, yeah, that's like the origins of that track.
Death is all around me, smell the scent in my nostrils. Grim Reaper glaring in my eyes, looking hostile. I pray to the apostles, a lot and no rosters. Drama in my life, cinematic like an Oscar. Philip Seymour Hoffman, I don't say this often. This the existential rap shit, Charlie Kaufman. Black man walking, perceive me with caution. Car crash kinda made me nauseous. Still fully conscious, never really lost it. Could have been dead, later. Up in a coffin, devil really stalking. I can see the pitchfork, fuck a publication, and the crackers up in Pitchfork. White folks switch up, I don't need the discourse. Went to Santa Fe to get away from the shitstorm. Population misinformed, media consumption, government corruption. I ain't with the fuck shit.
Being as influenced by cinema as you were, what have you learned about structure from films, and what do you think sound can do for a narrative that visuals can't?
It sounds just the palette. You can make your own visuals. When you have a visual, that's all that's there. You can't change that. Like a movie, like that's you can only interpret it one way, I would say. Well, not really. You can interpret it many ways, but that's the final product you're looking at. Whereas the sound, you can visualize it. Because it's not, you can't really see sound. You know what I'm saying? So sound interprets in your ear way different than when you're watching a movie. You know?
I feel like sound, you can do more manipulation with sound versus visuals, because it's right there. You can catch it in your surveillance view, versus sound, it's like any a crazy sound could come out of the blue and it's still going to leave you with a striking, like, what was that? And it's going to play off in your head.
Where we're at right now, I don't think artists really, like, they're not appreciating what they're putting out right now.
They're not.
I don't think we're in a very weird space in hip hop. It's not. It's very capitalistic.
I feel like we're in that cash cow era where people are just like plunging out music. They're not really putting their all into it. It's just like what I said on the legend of ABM, where I was like, we're running out of artists, and you know, we're what did I say on there?
I remember.
Oh man.
But I know what you, I know what,
yeah,
what you're talking about.
I was just like, we're running out of artists with patience. So it's like record labels are going to be soon reaching out because everything is going to get affected. People aren't going to be that engaged. And then soon record labels going to be reaching out to the artists that have been on vacation like us, just chilling. And I don't know, we're going to be taking over soon and have a different spin on hip hop.
Yeah, I think it's very capitalistic right now. And like you said, we want to make something. The human condition now with music is just, it's not really honest. We want to make something honest, you know?
You've talked about the human condition. You mentioned the words human condition, and it's very clear listening to these songs and body of work that it's a very conversational project. What kind of conversations do you want this album to evoke with, you know, the artistic and personal transformation featured on it?
Ooh, that's a good question. First off, I just want to say, I think the best art is honest, and I hope this invokes real emotion. And before I lose my train of thought, like I said, that's one criticism we got is like, you know, we're very blunt. Like everybody wants lyrical, miracle, spiritual shit. I see a lot of the reviews, you know what I'm saying? And for the people who get it, you know, you get it. But for the people that want us to be fucking Arm & Hammer 2.0, it's not that. Like, I like Odd Future. I grew up on Odd Future. Very blunt. Tyler's very blunt, you know what I'm saying? We want the realness. We don't want to, you know, we can get lyrical, you know, if we really wanted to. It could be super mysterious and artistic and cryptic and nothing against that. But I want to live in an honest time. Like, we already don't have honest music. So, you know, what difference does it make if you, lyrical, spiritual, miracle, I don't like something, or fuck, you know, basically Eminem's whole career is basically fuck the system and rebellious and I'm so demonic and I hate my mom, but he's so lyrical with the shit where you can just say that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like Tyler's early career can be compared to Eminem, but Tyler was not as lyrical as Eminem, but people compare it for the presentation, right? You know? So it's like, I think we should just be honest in this time.
Yeah, but I do want to raise a question. Can we be honest and be poetic at the same time?
Yeah.
But it's like, I feel like Eminem was more poetic than Tyler.
No, his that's what I'm saying. His presentation, bro, it was more complex because he was a complex rapper. They were both essentially saying the same things in their early career. The shock value part of it is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Like, and I'm not saying we're trying to be shock value. I'm saying, like, it's just the presentation. You don't have to be super lyrical, miracle to be a good rapper. Being a good rapper is an expression. You know what I'm saying? I think that's getting lost in this convoluted times of people that want cryptic shit and the most artistic shit. And we got to live in some honest times right now because there's not a lot of honest things that's going on right now. Yeah, hip-hop is so popular right now that it's been dumbed down. Like, we're just so used to this now because it's everywhere. People think, you tell somebody you're a rapper, they have one version of that. They don't know the bigger world of that if they don't care.
Can I say that's what the critics were looking for in the album? Like, lyrical?
No, I can't even say they weren't looking for that, bro. I can't even say that. I'm saying, like, the niggas that found us. Our fans know us. Like, the ones that we had prior to this know how we are. The criticisms came from new people getting into us because they thought it was some Arm & Hammer shit, or they thought it was some Earl shit. So let me clear that up right now. I know you don't be on the internet like that, so you just, you know, I'm telling you, it's the new niggas coming in. Okay. You know, they're thinking this is some other shit. I'm like, you know, I like NWA. Them niggas weren't lyrical like that. Only Ice Cube really had it. And MC Ren, sure. You know?
Being in a rap duo that is about to perform at arguably your biggest festival yet, you're about to likely be, you know, a lot of people's first rap show. Do you think about what you want people who are new to the culture take away when they see you?
Yeah, I thought about that. I don't know if you have a perspective, Ryan.
No, I've thought about it, but it hasn't come full circle to me yet. Like, It's still like surreal. I've been staring at a festival that I've been like I didn't grew up on, and now I'm on it. I'm still getting over that.
Huh? Yeah, we're gonna go as hard because like it's gonna be a lot of people's first rap show, but see, it's like we did Audio True the other day. Shout out to Audio True. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's they record sessions and stuff, and people were excited to have us because they didn't want to say we were more than rap, but we had a lot of elements of punk, and like it was very interesting. So I think when people see us, they're just gonna know there's another world within the larger rap world. There's a smaller world and a different, you know, subset of genres within the bigger rap world that people are familiar with. When they see us, they're just gonna be like, whoa, this is different. You know, that we're gonna give them something different.
I feel like it's okay to be a unicorn. It's okay to go from singing to heavy metal to like super lyrical Black Thought, and then back to like just mosh pitting and having fun and singing.
Yeah, because we're all that. We got songs like Headshots where it's fucking nuts, and then we got songs like Stanley Kubrick where it's lyrics. You know, and we try to do all that. We're not just trying to be a one trick pony with this shit. Like, we want to really set the bar for Pitchfork because it is our biggest performance ever. Huge. At this point right now. So it's a big deal. Like, I think people are going to be in the audience first time listeners. Who are these guys?
What's next for Angry Black Man?
What's next for us is honestly more shows. I want to work on another album, and ain't no telling how that album's going to sound. You know, will we sound like rock 1 minute, techno 1 minute, then you may hear some reggae on there somewhere. I don't know. We're going to find out. But I just know we're not trying to stay contained, and we definitely want to put more awareness on that legend of ABM, not the album, but just us.
Yeah, I think people get that confused. It's not like we're legendary. It's the story of us.
Yeah,
I've said this in a couple interviews because I don't want to be like the legend of ABM. Like, oh my God, the legends. No, not that. It's like, the legend of the title is inspired by I Am Legend by Richard Matheson, the book more specifically, because the movie is very Hollywood and it makes him out to be a legend, right? Whereas the book is more like he's a boogeyman, he's the last man, he's a legend, he's a story that these creatures talk about, and he's hunting them. He's a relic of the past, you know what I'm saying?
So that's how talking about a lore.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's the theme of the book. Existentialism, moving on in a society that doesn't need you anymore, the boogeymen of that society. We incorporated those themes into the title of our album, and you know, the legend of ABM. And I think whatever comes next will always be building upon that lore.
Yeah,
you know,
we just want to make the awareness more grand and just more.
Yeah, we want to keep going. We don't want to I wish we came out in the early 2000s so we could be more mysterious, but you know, the internet world won't let you do it. So I think we're pretty mysterious, though.
I'm mysterious.
I would like to think that a lot of people don't know much about us, even though they talk to us on the internet. We haven't done enough shows for you to really like know us. But I don't.
Yeah.
I want to. That's why we're not on the covers of any of our albums. We want to be able to walk in and be like, "Do you know who Angry Black Man is? And do you have any vinyl from them or any product?" And them not put two and two together and be like, you're on the fucking cover.
What's the biggest misconception of Angry Black Man?
Say that oxymoron time? Or...
No, you bring that up a lot. I'm like, bro, that's old.
That was a big misconception.
That we're super angry. I think that's, I mean, if we can.
That
we're always pissed off, that we're Death Grips angry.
But yeah, they expect us to be like, bad in real life, and I'm like, it's life, man.
Yeah, because you could be angry, you could be happy. I think like what Psalm said, bro, like she said, this is a rapper from Chicago, very revered in the Chicago scene. She was at Audio Tree. She's like, y'all brought a new theme to angry. Like, angry could be cool. Like, it doesn't always have to be angry. Like, like y'all brought a new level to angry. And I respect that because that's the new angry black man. You know what I'm saying? That's the 2020 and up. We made our own path. I think that's the biggest misconception, that we're always pissed off and oh, they're like death grips. It's like, it's really not.
See, I could be angry right now, but I'm just smiling on the camera.
Yeah, like, I think, you know, I can't say we backed ourselves off in a hole with that, but I think of it, I think of us like Wu-Tang, where it's like they're political, but they're also very personal and they're nerds. You know what I'm saying? And they like shit. You know, they talk about women. I know in the songs I talk about getting nudes and shit, but they also talk about being depressed, you know, or existentialism of dying. It's just a lot there, you know, and I think that's the misconception. The misconception is that we're super political and da 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 da. And oh my God, da 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 da, militant, da da da. And but it's like, you listen to it, it's like, okay, there's some of that, you know, but there's other things.
I think that's what makes Angry Black Men such a great group, is that you're always subverting not just everybody else's expectations and perceptions, but more importantly, beyond that, your own.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Like, man.
No, yeah, I think that was the goal originally. When we first made it, we just had to go through the steps of life and get experience and have things happen to us to mold us into what we are today. Like a damn near final product. It's not, we're still going to be evolving, but I don't think we're going to get stray too differently from where we're at now.
Yeah,
it'll just get better, I think. It'll be better versions of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not, you know, you're going to be laughing in the future. Like, what are they
into? What happened to them? Like, why are they, like, it's okay. It's not like, and I love Kanye, but it's not like you look at Kanye now and look at him then, and it's just vastly different. Not even from a physicality, but just overall. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's
Boopity Scoop.
I'm trying to think of an artist like the natural, like Childish Gambino is like the natural evolution. Cause like you can see signs of this if you look up his early 2000s shit, or even, no, Tyler. I would say Tyler's the best example of that. Like you listen to Goblin, you see, you hear these beats, then you listen to Igor. It's like, I can see where this could turn into that.
And he even explained it himself. Like, he was just going, it was a real shifty time during that time. That's why the album sounded so
he needed Cherry Bomb, though, to, you know, to make that. But yeah, I hope, yeah, I think you're, one day, whatever we put out later on, you're going to hear some of that in the Legend of ABM. Hopefully it's a more advanced version of that.
Angry black man, real factual, casual. Come up with a plan, real tactical, magical. When you spell the name out, keep it all capital. Keeping this shit practical, giving fans what they asking. Destined for greatness, touching them stages. Bitch, I'm going apeshit. Music authentic, we don't make no fiction. It's been a struggle, but we keep it pacing. Life is amazing. Pouring up, rolling up, good conversations. Mixing my soul and my fears for the playlist. History forming, you might wanna tape it. Industry dying of artists with patience. Pushing these fake-ass agendas tenacious. Fucking the game up, we still on vacation. These labels gon' need some replacements. Living in time, this era is mine. Come hit the line and don't waste my time. Grim-looking eyes, so don't even try. Stitched up the game, now we saving lives. Collect what I gain.
I wish I could show my appreciation for this
podcast.
I wish I could respond to it somehow or be notified in the future when
Fly Fidelity
updates, because it's so great. But I don't think there's a way I can do any of those things.
Uh-oh.
You're wrong.
Subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and SoundCloud, and never miss an episode. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
My peoples, are you with me where you at?